Well, I'm thankful this morning because Reverend Eileen told me that you've all been preaching and learning about the book of Revelation. She said, I'm going to give you a pass. You don't have to preach from Revelations. I said, thank you. That's a challenging set of scriptures. Our scripture reading for today is from Isaiah 56, and it begins what is sometimes called 3rd Isaiah, with a third writer or set of writers, and with a focus a little different than the previous two chapters of Isaiah. 2nd Isaiah is sort of a motivational message of comfort to exiles preparing to return home and rebuild. 3rd Isaiah reflects the confused, harsh reality of that community coming home. Nevertheless, chapter 56 does indeed tie together the themes of comfort and hope and all that sort of feel-good type stuff. And the shift, that sort of changing from one gear to another, is in the ever-widening circle of who's in. Who is it that receives comfort and hope? David Maxwell, a professor of theology, breaks down into three very distinct groups those folks who first heard these verses of Isaiah. Group one, exiles from Babylon and beyond who had returned to their cities and towns, only to find others living in their homes, a disaster economy and a mix of cultures and religions, and also a lack of order and routine that they had known in exile. Sure, things were bad in Babylon, but there was a stability of sorts. There was plenty of bread and water there for them. Group two, those Jews who were left behind, the ones who were considered not quite important enough or wealthy enough to have been exiled. After scraping along and scavenging a living for decades, watching other folks come and rule their land, now those uppity exiles come back, those upper one percenters, and they're whining about the disarray they're finding while showing off the fancy gadgets they had obtained in Babylon. And group three, other powerless non-Jews and foreigners who had landed in this politically unstable country, and now they're unsure of their own future as a Jewish population figures out just how to reorganize both as a religion and as a society. Well, disaster recovery is a tedious, exhausting, and downright messy business. We've seen that here in the United States and in other countries devastated by war and natural disasters and forced migration. And all these questions bubble up from those scenarios. Who has the power to make decisions now? Who are the ones that can take over the land and profit from disaster recovery efforts? Whom can you even trust anymore? You might not even know the neighbor next door because maybe the ex-neighbors stayed with their aunt in another town and did not return. Instead, they gave their keys to this weird-looking nephew who's now occupying the house next door and playing strange and loud music. Perhaps most importantly, from our own perspective, who belongs now and who does not? Who is in and who is out? Can there be justice for all, or is that just some sort of pie-in-the-sky ideal? Can community be recreated after such tragedy and disruption? Wow, can community be recreated? I think that question hits us pretty squarely in the gut after the aftermath of Charlottesville. Can we today hope for such a recreation in the midst of the brutal reality, the disbelief, the fear, and the grief? Can we find our way to justice, respect, and love for all of humanity? Well, the author, or authors of today's passages said yes to that sort of recreation and laid out a vision of community that included those three groups, a rather radical new definition of who is in and who is out began to take shape. That old system came to mind when I read a few weeks ago about some outward restrictions of a dress code that had recently surfaced in a Des Moines club and since has been rescinded, thank goodness. Those restrictions were no plain t-shirts, no baggy jeans, no jeans hanging below the waist, no do-rags, no sideways caps, no construction boots. No doubt targeting certain racial groups and excluding certain racial groups. And seriously, who doesn't sometimes wear a plain t-shirt? In our reading from Isaiah, those previously excluded from the covenant may now belong. Membership is not based on gender or cultural customs or even religion, but rather on behavior. Do what is right. Maybe even change some of our behaviors in the process. All may fit under Yahweh's ever-expanding rainbow umbrella. Now, in verse 6 through 7, we're told the requirement for membership is to keep the Sabbath and obey the covenant. And maybe we don't get off quite that easily. Maybe it does not mean that if you can go to church on Sunday and can recite the Lord's Prayer, you are in. It means living in a certain way. It requires us to do good, seek justice, rescue the oppressed, defend the orphan, plead for the widow. It means things such as this faith community supporting the justice work of many organizations, including Amos. Now, a hot topic part of this vision then and today is the idea that God's house of prayer might entertain, even accept, other religions. And many faith groups today in the growing multi-ethnic United States see evangelism possibilities with new immigrant groups, especially those of other religions. It does not appear, however, that Isaiah's vision calls for people to change their religion. Instead, it invites everyone to gather under a covenant that's based on justice and doing what is right. The words of Isaiah open the religious door to those previously excluded based on their sexual condition, such as eunuchs, nationality, or religious practice. Think about that. Read the fine print. It does not require or even ask them to alter or deny their sexual condition, nationality, or religious practice. Yes, even those strange-smelling burnt offerings and sacrifices will be accepted, says God. My house shall be called a house of prayer for all people. There is another challenge in the text that I'd like to point out, and that's kind of our own tendency to think that we're all in the in-group, you know, the cool kids, based simply on our religious affiliation. And I've got a confession to make. I'm probably one of the biggest offenders in that arena. How can I not, when the United Church of Christ has accepted, affirmed, loved, and embraced me? Thing is, we can get blinded by believing that the house of prayer for all peoples is our house because of the familiar and comforting religious objects and sounds and folks who surround us in community each week. What defines a faithful person is not his or her sexual condition, nationality, or religion, says Isaiah. The faithful person is the one who loves the name of the Lord, keeps the Sabbath, and holds fast God's covenant. Those things don't have much to do with particular church affiliation, but with a way of life that honors and protects every single creature of God. Every single creature. For this God refuses to be worshiped as an image. This God recognizes the commitment and love of those who take care of one another, along with the widow, the orphan, and the stranger. I'm reminded time and time again that the good news is wherever you find it. Some years back, when the UCC General Synod was in Tampa, my partner and I explored Ybor City, a kind of touristy district of the city, very LGBTQ inclusive, kind of bohemian, lots of watering holes and shops and restaurants. And so we wandered into this kind of combination community center shop, and we were introduced to Esme, a trans drag performer. And bless her heart, she took these two uninformed tourists under her wings. Esme had grown up in that neighborhood, knew it well, and had experienced its transformation over the years. And she gave us the best tips on the flavor of the nearby watering holes and the best places to dine at. I still remember a great meal at a Cuban restaurant there. And she also invited us to her show at Hamburger Mary's the following day for a Sunday brunch kind of thing. It became our church that day. No burnt offerings involved, but there were a few mimosas to be had that Sunday. David Maxwell says this also. This text from Isaiah is great news for the hurricane or tsunami survivors who never left, scavenging a living while slowly rebuilding their home and community. It's good news for the Mexican day laborer who moved into the abandoned home next door with his wife and children. It is good news for the Palestinian Muslim refugee who was just placed in an apartment across the street. And for Michael and I, it was good news to both us and Esme. For all are given the opportunity to embody goodness, justice, and caring for one another. Sometimes that may involve a change of behavior on our part. But may we cling to whatever shred of good news we can find in these times, experience it, embrace it, share it, and dig deep for the strength to stand against racism, anti-Semitism, and all the isms of our society. Maintain justice and do what is right. Thanks be to God.